بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. A student had been graduating and the turban was being tied around his head. The teacher knew and the student knew as well that the student is incompetent. That has pushed him to get him out because he's been too long at the madrasa now. So they have to get him out somehow, right? Put it through the graduation process and get you out. So he pleaded to the teacher, you know me, that I'm not competent, but I've been just pushed through the process and I'm completed. Now, what do I do afterwards? I'll be faced with different scenarios, people asking me about complicated stuff. What do I do? So the ustad thought for a moment and then he said, anybody asks you any question and say there is a difference of opinion in this. So educated and the uneducated will think this person is a great researcher. He knows the differences as well. Let alone the answer, he knows the difference, different opinions. So you can easily work yourself out of this mess. So this helped him for some time. People should think, hey, this person knows this stuff, he knows the differences and what knowledge he's got. Sometimes you put in a spot. Al Mu'tamir says that in the Safar for Hajj, so there were a lot of Bengali people that were asking him questions. And Mu'tamir says, I don't understand Bengali. So I had to tell them one, at least something that they understand that I don't understand the language. So I went to one Bengali and asked him, you know, how must I tell them that I don't understand the language? He says to Mulana, you must tell them, Bangla bozi na. Bozi na. Bozi, buji. Buji, as you say, samaj buj. So it's bozi na. But this bozi na, it's got a bad meaning as well in Farsi. In Bengali language, it means no understanding, right? Understanding it. Buzi na. But in Persian, it's got a bad meaning. Persian means, buzina means, it's a monkey. So it's got a bad meaning. So anyway, throughout the Safar, Bengalis used to come and ask me, and I had one standard answer, Bengali bozi na. And maybe there was some mischief also, that you think of the other meaning. Bengalis are monkeys. So this meaning could have had this meaning. Until one day I got trapped, he says. And I told the person, Bengali bozi na. So the Bengalis refer to us as Hindustani. Then we refer to them as Bengali, and they refer to us as Hindustani. So this person said to me, Hindustani bozina. He just turned the whole thing around. So anyway, in Arabic, this type of communication is called mushakalat. Mushakalat means suratan. Apparently, outwardly, the kalam seems to be the same. Outwardly, the discussion or whatever is going on seems to be alike. But the meaning is totally different. Like, you say, wajaza'u sayyi'atin Sayyi'atun. The reward of a wrong is erod, wrong equally. The reward of a wrong is an equal wrong. So when you analyze it, you see that how can you fix a wrong with a wrong? This is wrong. You don't, two wrongs don't make a right, that's what we say. How can you fix a wrong with another wrong? So this is called mushakalat. That's a figurative speech, right? So the apparent meaning is not intended. What's intended is something beyond. What's intended, وَجَزَاهُ سَيِّئَةٍ سَيِّئَةٌ, because he's wronged you, right? So you have the right to retaliate equally. جَزَاهُ سَيِّئَةٍ سَيِّئَةٌ مِثْلُهَا. You have got the right to equal retaliation. Right? Well, like how the Quran Sharif says, اللَّهُ يَسْتَهْزِئُ بِهِمْ. اللَّهُ يَسْتَهْزِئُ بِهِمْ. You get a group, there is a mushrikeen or the munafiqeen. And this munafiqeen, they play games, you know, it's a book about democracy. So they are fence sitters, they try to play both sides. Gain the good this side, gain the good that side. So they play an in-between game. So this is a very dangerous game. And when I say it's a dangerous game, because the Quran Sharif says, "Ma umiru illa liya'budu mukhlisin lahu ad-din hunafa." The command that we are given, the command that is directed to us, is that we worship Allah Ta'ala and hunafa. Hunafa, what it means, literally, hanif. Hanif, what it means, to be one-sided, to come on one side. So when you say Hanif, that I am the side, one side. So which side? The side of Allah Ta'ala. In any situation, there's a problem, then I'm not playing a balancing act. Today, this is considered as a kamal, as an achievement, that I can play a balancing act, you know, can be with this group, with that group, and I can play it well, both sides. So this is considered as an achievement. So you, with a group of Muslims, then you can play your cards well, and you are with a group of non-Muslims, you can play your cards well. So you go well here, you go well here, so you can, you know how to balance your act. So this balancing act is considered as an achievement wherever you go. But in the light of this verse, ma umiru illa liya'budu Allah mukhlisin lahu ad-din, then it doesn't want you to be playing a balancing act. Be straight and be one-sided. Show exactly what's your status. Show your status. And obviously the reason to show your status is very important. Because if you're playing a balancing act, you're creating a confusion amongst people. They don't know which side you belong to. You belong to this side or you belong to that side. When I say it's a democracy and hypocrisy is the same, like you'll see a politician anywhere around the world, right, when it comes to election time or he wants some votes and all that, then he'll approach some Muslims. Then the Muslims will allow him to speak at the masjid, right? Now, this is unanimously accepted amongst the ulama that you can't give the non-Muslim a position of respect in the masjid. Such a respectable position that he will address Muslims. Yes, he can come if he's clean and he's clothed correctly, then he can come, but he must come humbly, modestly, as though he's under some Muslim and he's coming in. But you're giving him a position where he's going to be over the Muslims, well, that's not right, it's not on. So those Muslims that think politically, they look at political agendas, political benefits. No, you know, we'll give him this position and tomorrow he'll do for us, our businesses, Muslims, etc. So they look at any situation politically and how we can secure our benefits and our advantages. Imam Malik Rahmatullah doesn't even allow them to come to the masjid. We say it's allowed, but they must come as though they are subservient. They are under someone, subservient. In someone's subserviency, they can come and go. But now they've been given this position as though they are teaching us Islam. They are teaching us our deen. Give them a position in the masjid. Well, that's not right. So on. So the one that is allowing it, he's creating a confusion. Right? And the politician himself is creating a confusion. Right? So either he's talking about dunya or deen. If he's talking about deen, then he's not in a position of talking deen. Because he's a mushrik. If he was talking deen, then why isn't he a Muslim? And if he's talking dunya, then masjid is not the place for talking dunya. So you can't give him that position to be talking at the masjid at that forum. See? Then they give him that position, position as a khatib in a masjid on a Jummah. And then the ones that have allowed it, can you imagine the extent of the confusion that they have created in the whole public? Now, hey, we are against kufr, we are against disbelief, against mushriks. But today you gave him such a respectable position that's only afforded to a pious person, righteous, learned person. That person is given this position here. And yeah, this person here has been given this position. So that's why I say this politics, democracy and hypocrisy is about the same thing. So it's a political season. This person will come to a masjid and someone will give him a hat. He'll put on a hat and then he'll learn some Islamic phrases. Bismillah, Alhamdulillah. So some Muslim phrases he will learn. So I was seeing this Emirates Airlines, right? So you see now, some of the staff can be pure non-Muslims, right? But as you're entering or as you're leaving, Assalamualaikum, Assalamualaikum. They can't even say Assalamu Alaikum. So for business reasons, they are taught to behave like Muslims. But what Muslims, bhai, na kapre ka tikana, na sar ka tikana, head is not right, clothing are not right, but he's made to appear like a Muslim. So this is not on. Ma umiru illa liyabud. That's your version of Islam. It's your interpretation. And our interpretation is different. It's not that. You're not Islam, there's no such a thing like makeup. You in or you out. And a makeup Muslim, that's a clown that. And that clown is not playing his act well also. So look at his clothes, look like a pure kafir. They're saying, Assalamu alaikum. Now you're getting into a doubt, into a confusion. So this type of business is not right. And really, because we don't have that level of understanding, so nobody raises a brow, nobody talks against it. Alamgir, Aurangzeb Rahmatullah, was a great ruler in India. Very great ruler. And he ruled over India for approximately 50 years. So, and apart from being a ruler, he was an alim. Under his supervision, the whole Alamgiri was prepared. Whatever is prepared for the day, for example, ulama, he had about 500 ulama doing the research work, and then they would read it to him. And if there was any correction, then he would put a correction. And then he was a wali as well. An alim and a wali as well. In the war now, whilst this firing going on, you know, there's a crossfire. Right precisely at the crossfire, now it's coinciding with namaz times. So now people are afraid, you know, I'll lead the namaz. In the midst of the battle, and he's leading namaz, the bullets are just flying up. They're just moving away, avoiding him. So it was his habit, his style, that if he went to a town, was undertaking a safar or a journey, and was passing a town, then he would find out, are there any pious, righteous, ulama, etc., meet them, talk to them, and give them a gift, take du'as from them. So that was his style. In the meanwhile, there was a clown that used to come around. Now it was also, he would do it out of like entertaining himself, you know, cheering himself, that if anybody could deceive him, you know, could deceive him, they'll give him a gift. So this clown that used to make himself up, He would come in different disguises, different forms. And each time he came, Alamgir Rahmatullah would make it out, or this is the person. These kings, they had something to cheer themselves, because the whole day they're under stress. Kill that person, go out war here, attack that person there, you know. So their work is very, very stressful. So because their work is stressful, so they had something, they needed something just to cheer up a little bit. So that the decisions are all correct. Okay, correct, sahih. They aren't overwhelmed when they're passing a decision. Now you're overwhelmed when you're passing a decision, you can pass a wrong decision. It can cause trouble. So you need to maintain calmness. You need to maintain composure when you're passing a decision. You can't be overwhelmed passing a decision at that time. There was another king, right? And he would make a challenge that if anybody produces some poetry that I don't know, then I'll give him an inam. I'll give him a gift. Gift, how big will be the gift? The gift will be equivalent to the papers that he's brought. So much of papers he's brought. Those days, our papers would be a little bit heavy, weightier. So I'll give him gold in that weight. So it was 1 ounce, the papers, 1 ounce, and 1 ounce of gold. Now, this king had such a memory, you recite a poetry to him once, and he's got it. So anybody comes and recites one poetry, he knows it, so they're not getting any gifts. So one person, what he did, he used some very words that are very like remote, hardly used, you know. Hardly ever used, you know. And he wrote his poetry in stone, see, in stone, carved in stone. And poetry, that is, you know, words, the choice of the words, it's not unheard of. Like how the Majlis, you know, some of the words that he uses. You have to open up dictionaries to check up sometimes. So he uses that type of language, you see. And then he presented the paper, presented the poetry. The king couldn't get it right. So now, obviously, he had to pay him according to the papers that he's delivering. And the paper is delivered on stone. And the stone is about 20 keys. So now the king is watching. You played a trick on me. So he explained the king, see, we are poets, right? Our business is poetry. And your memory is so good that anybody recites any poetry and you got it. So how are you going to run? How are we going to sustain ourselves? So I thought we have to sustain ourselves. That was the only way. So I'll talk about words that are not used at all, extinct, you know. And I'll write it on stone and I'll deliver it to you. So I came out. So he had to pay him accordingly, so much of gold he had to pay him. Anyway, so this was the style of Hazrat Alamgir Aurangzeb Rahmatullah Ali. So this clown, he would try to deceive and Alamgir would catch him out. Anytime he tries, and he'll catch him out. So he heard that Alamgir Rahmatullah is undertaking a journey, for example, from Durban to Johannesburg, right? So en route he's going to stop, he knows the stops he's going to make, more or less. So he stopped one place. In the meanwhile, he pretended to be like a very pious person, like a mixed Sufi, meditation, muraqabah, namaz, and meanwhile, Alamgir Rahmatullah sent his man to go and check around the pious person in this town. So they found this person, all his zikr, namaz, tilawat, meditation. So they spoke to him, they informed him that there's a very pious person here, and he doesn't even entertain us, you know. He's so deeply absorbed in the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala that he doesn't even entertain anybody. So Alamgir Rahmatullah really got impressed. Hey, who is this buzurg now? You know? He's so lost in the love of Allah Ta'ala. I must get him. Went up. So Alamgir Rahmatullah also got overwhelmed. Hey, this is that person. So he gave the gift. When he offered the gift, he threw the gift away. He says, "Tum hame aapki tarah se dunya ke kutta samajhte ho? You count me as the dog of the dunya, giving me this dunya." Threw it away. Anyway, Alamgir Rahmatullah was impressed. Now that he was deceived, now he opened up the disguise. I am the person. I am the person now. So Alamgir Rahmatullah told him, see, I had already given you a gift. Why do you throw it all? So he says now, see this word, this statement, I have to give you this whole muqaddama for this one sentence. So he says that my act would not be complete had I accepted that. Because I disguised myself as a buzrug, as a wali, right? As a wali of Allah Ta'ala, right? And there are poles apart from the dunya. If I'm saying that I'm a wali and I'm accepting dunya, then my disguise, my act, my pretending is not right. My pretending will be complete if I throw that away. Then will my act be right. Therefore, I rejected it. So what I'm saying is, these politicians or those people on the flight, right, they are pretending to be Muslims, but the act is not complete. One side, they seem like shaitans. See, the clothing is like shaitan. But the language they're using is the language of Muslims. That is why in the Hizbul Azam, there is a Mastun Dua. I ask you for refuge, O Allah Ta'ala, Zamanan. يُتَّبَعُ لَا يُتَّبَعُ فِيهِ الْعَلِيمِ وَلَا يُسْتَحْيَا فِيهِ مِنَ الْحَلِيمِ Allah Ta'ala, I seek refuge from that time where لَا يُتَّبَعُ فِيهِ الْعَلِيمِ where ulama, etc. will not be followed. People will not follow the ulama, like how it's happening today. I feel like this. Everybody give you suggestions. People come with their problems, you know. Come and talk the problems. But before asking for a solution, they'll give us a bayan. You know? And the bayan will be about 20 minutes. They'll give a bayan. This hadith and this Quran Sharif and this ayat. So they'll give you a bayan. But if you knew it so well, then why did you come to us? So they give you a bayan first. Then they ask for suggestions. So that's not the way. If you know it or you don't know it. Don't know it, say I don't know it. But now, you do as though you know it, and then you do as though you don't know it, therefore you're asking for a suggestion. And in between, balancing act, that is not right. Okay. So that's not right. I know it, or I don't know it. So this dua of the hadith, لَا يُتَّبَعُ فِيهِ الْعَلِيمِ وَلَا يُسْتَحْيَا فِيهِ مِنَ الْحَلِيمِ Personal is dignity, respect, you know. Very, very dignified person. But they don't even show respect to him. وَلَا يُسْتَحْيَا There's no shame for that person. You know, a person is dignified, respectable, honorable person. So we feel somewhat that we respect the person. Yeah, and person of knowledge, no respect, no regards. Person of dignity, respect, and you've got no regards for him as well. Now the last part of the hadith, that is very, very serious. قُلُوبُهُمْ قُلُوبُ الْعَاجِمْ وَأَلْسِنَتُهُمْ أَلْسِنَتُ الْعَرَبِ That age will be such that Their hearts will be the hearts of kafirs. Ajim, translated as kafirs, right? Their hearts will be like kafirs. But their languages will be like Muslims. Arabic language. So you're going to speak like a Muslim. Outwardly, you carry yourself as a Muslim. But in your heart, it's full of kufr, full of disbelief. So now this is the time that we are in. And outwardly, they show Islam. But within the heart, what is there? Is there that Islam within their hearts, within their minds? Do they have the real feeling, the love for Islam, the respect for Islam? See? No, that respect for Islam, the love for Islam, that type of affinity with Islam, they don't have it. No, affinity with Islam, but just that they must show that we are Muslims, that show Islam. That show Islam, well, it's not on. Allah Ta'ala wants the Islam that comes with sincerity. Ma umiru. إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُ اللَّهَ مُخْلِصِينَ لَهُ الدِّينَ Sincere and hunafa, one-sided. Explain the meaning, tafsir, hunafa. It has to be one-sided. When we use the word one-sided, normally it sounds like very derogatory that you are one-sided, you are biased, you are prejudiced, right? Normally. But in life, you have to be one-sided. Right? There are other women around, right? But you in the nikah, you got a woman in your nikah, right? Do you flirt around with other women or you come onto the side of your wife. So if they say if those women tell you, you're not fair, you're supposed to be showing love to everybody, to us, to this one, that one, that one. So will you become overcome with this statement and show them love, this one, that one, and your wife? No, I'm one-sided. I'm on the side of my wife. I'm not with you. So this is not counted as prejudice. It's not counted as biased. It's not derogatory. Right? But unfortunately, if a person behaves in this manner nowadays, right, that he's only with his wife, then they ridicule him. He's looked down upon. The person is working in a corporate environment. Then he must greet and meet with all. He must greet and meet at all with all. That's a requirement. Otherwise, you don't fall in the culture of this environment. This environment has got a certain type of a culture, and you don't fall within the ambit of this culture. So they can then write you off. Why? Because you don't fall within the ambit of that culture of that company, right? So they made it so difficult that you must now fall within that. You must greet and meet all. Are you going to greet and meet all? And agar aapki aankh, aapki nazar kisi ke par par jaye, aur uski mohabbat aapke dil mein a jaye, to your eyes fall on some girl, and then her love penetrates your heart. Then what's going to happen? It's a disaster then. So they're not worried about the disaster. They only worried about the culture. And the culture, everybody must meet, talk, and everybody must be equal. There's no such a thing. It's all a farce. It's a deception. And then, unfortunately, for our work, we'll go to any length, any type of sacrifice that's required. We don't realize that, one is, this culture is wrong, right? And then if it is that you are impressed with some girl, right? She is taking to you and you are taking to her, right? What happens? Or see, for example, if it's your wife also working in that type of environment and someone takes to her and she takes to that person, right? Imagine now, just think a little bit more broadly. You are working in that corporate, your wife is working in a corporate, and this is the type of environment. And you know what happens with nazar. Everything starts off with the eyes. That is why the Quran Sharif starts off with the eye. يَهُدُّ مِنْ أَبْصَارِهِمْ. Lower your gaze. النَّذْرُ سَهْمٌ مَسْمُومٌ. It's a poisonous arrow. Just imagine a poisonous arrow getting you. So, is it easy to get out the venom out of your body? The venom that came out of your body, that's dangerous. It's a killer thing. So that's nazar. It gets you, it will destroy you. To pull that thing out, that's an effort. To get that thing out afterwards is an effort. You can't get it out. It's so difficult. Once it's in your system, then to pull you out is not an easy thing. I know, I got experience here. I talk to people, I have to listen to their stories all that. But you get people coming up at the age of 65, 70, no exaggeration, around 65, 70. But they had some school day experience, some class girl, etc. But the memory of the girl is not out of their hearts. Now, at that age, where there will be grandfathers, nanas, and dadas, right? But in the school days, in the college, university days, they had some experience, right? Maybe they were flirting, whatever. But they have become, moved on in life, became so old, right? But the memory of that girl is not yet forgotten. She's not forgotten him, and he's not forgotten. So now, can you trust such a person then? Now, if the wife doesn't trust the husband, then will you say she's wrong? Will you say that she's too jealous and possessive? Now, that's what they make it to be today. If the wife is doubting you because of this type of behavior, then how they ridicule the person, they ridicule is too possessive. He's too jealous. So the one that is chaste, right, then he is jealous, he is possessive. But the one that is not chaste, then he is on. He's the right person. See? So they are promoting this type of indecency. You must not be decent, you mustn't be chaste. That's promoting it. You are indecent, you are right, you're on. But you're decent, it's not right. Now look at the wrongs that can happen after that. Just think about it for a moment, right? There was an article written in one of the dailies of England, right? That article, Al-Manar, was a newspaper or a magazine in Egypt, right? Al-Manar had reproduced this article. So it was written first in England, and then they reproduced it in the Egyptian papers, Al-Manar, right? Arabic. So a woman complains. She complains. Oh, this article was some years ago, maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, whatever, right? So this woman complains. She says that I'm an English woman, Christian by birth, but I really envy the Muslim woman. Because the Muslim woman, she's living a life of chastity and purity, right? She is in the confine of the home. She's for the husband. And she takes care of the child. So that's her two duties. One is looking after the affairs of the husband, the house, and the children. That's her affairs. So her life is a life of purity. Her life is a life of dignity, a life of respect. The husband feels very, very calm, composed, and he feels good, you know, that I got someone taking care of my affairs. He's got a degree of confidence and trust in his wife. She's clean, you know. She's not touched. So he's got a respect for her. She respects the duties that are assigned to her. She respects the wealth and the property of the husband. Right. So he's got a respect for her. The fact that she takes care of his property, his wealth, his children, right, his home. She takes care of the whole thing. The whole thing she takes care. So she's a pure woman. She's clean. She won't do anything without my consent. So a Muslim, when he's going into his home, then he's going with a very clean, very good, a confident, clean mind he's going. But he says, now, our community is totally opposite, absolutely opposite. Because we've been encouraged from childhood, we're encouraged to leave the home. When we're encouraged to leave the home, then and lead a free life, and we are impressed and we are convinced into thinking that there is a thing like equality. Man and woman are the same, right? So, in England, she's talking about now England, at least a good 95% of English women, they're not chaste. Before marriage and after marriage, they're not chaste. Because for them, it's just like popping popcorn, you know. You're sleeping with someone, you're like taking popcorn. So what's wrong? Taking a chappy's bubble gum, right? What's wrong? So for them it's nothing. Like you say chewing bubble gum. What's wrong in that? For them that's their life. That's their culture. That's how they behave, they think, and they act. Because they talk about the gender equality. That if that man can do it, why can't I do it? And therefore you'll see this. At a public forum, you'll see it even more clearly, more distinctly. When it's a public forum in an office or, for example, at an airport, you know, wherever you meet up, you know. So when they're meeting, his wife is meeting that person's husband is meeting their wife, they're embracing, they're kissing, it's on. The husband doesn't mind that his wife is embracing with the other person. He's not worried, not worried at all. So this is what is called the use. How can the use go? Huh? Kakul, yeah. So the husband has lost his shame. The husband has lost his shame, and there's no such a thing like chastity. So can the husband in this type of a community, society, can he feel confident of his wife? I don't know what she's doing behind me. In front of me she can And Brij can be in the laps of the next person. Then behind me, what she'll do? Now it's a get together and there's a dance, right? In the dance, his wife is dancing with that person is dancing with this person's wife. They can carry on holding and jumping and all that for half an hour. And it's perfect, accepted society, accepted culture. Now, this woman is complaining. This woman, English woman, is complaining. This article was carried by Al Manar, right? Then she goes on and she says, you know, because 95% of our community is involved in this, so we are not even sure about our own children. We're not sure about our children. The husband doesn't know that it's his own child. It's very much possible that he's looking after the next person's child, not his own child. He doesn't know whose child his father he's taking care of, because this is a free society, free community, intermingling, mixing up. So you don't know whose child you are taking care of. So the first problem is that there is no shame, no modesty. So there will be no, there will be, when there's no modesty and shame, right? So they will lose confidence on each other. And number three, at the third level, you don't know whose child you are taking care of. It's not your own child, it's someone else's child, but you're taking care of that next person's child. Then at the fourth level, she's complaining, right? At the fourth level, if the children are growing up like this, then they're growing up with the same culture. Right? Parents are all working out of home, and you bring up children like the wild grass in the garden, wild bush. So they're growing up this wild, absolutely no direction, no chastity, no respect, no shame. They're growing up, boys are growing up the same manner, women are growing up the same manner. So really, when you know Islam, we don't see the blessing of Islam, mahasina Islam. We don't see the good, how much we have gained out of Islam. Really, we think, no, it's so hard, difficult, na'uzubillah. Really, Islam, you're gaining both ways, dunya and akhirat. Now imagine that Muslim, the wife is to him, right? Once I was coming from Umrah via Emirates, right? So at the Emirate reception, as we are checking out, you know, waiting at the lounge there, transit lounge. So one South African auditor, he happened to be on the same flight. So at the transit lounge, he saw one Muslim. I knew that Muslim, and he's perhaps his daughters or something. But they were all about the same height, you see. So he found a reason to throw some ridicule at this Muslim. Right? So he said, he had must be about four or three or four daughters, maybe equal in height. So he said, oh, yeah, you got four wives, eh? So from his statement, I made out he's intending something wrong. He's not intending good. White person, Christian, and this was a statement that he made. So this uncle, now he's coming up to his defense. No, I said, no, we are allowed to have four wives, but be equal. So I said, child, you keep quiet. Let me do the answering. That wasn't the answer now. This is, what you're saying is right, but that's not the answer for this occasion. So I told him, see, our concept of marriage is totally different to your concept of marriage. Your concept of marriage is nothing more than to officialize a contract. You're playing around. The slang word is jolling around. You're doing everything. But you just officialize the whole thing. That's your concept. Now after marriage, you'll carry on. You'll be sleeping with this one, another one. You'll be flirting, looking, eyeing, playing around, dancing, doing with any woman. That's your concept. Right? And our concept of marriage is totally different. Poles apart. We playing around or flirting or fascinating or fantasizing. Right? We won't even entertain the thoughts of the next girl. Don't even look at her. We don't even entertain the thoughts. So when we get married, it's just our wives and us. So a strange woman is a stranger, total stranger. We don't fantasize. We don't meet. We don't talk. We don't flirt. We don't take lustful glance. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So do you feature anywhere near us? Is there that level of purity in your way? So I remember he was sitting next to me in the flight, right to Durban. But from that point till the summum bukun, absolutely silent. You couldn't say a word after that. Just for the, what I told him was a fact. So, see, our culture is totally different. And we need to understand. We need to understand that our culture is different. We begin to become overawed with this English culture, and then we want to send our girls also for some education. Or what if? The question is, what if? In other words, what if she becomes widowed, then what? So she's got something to fall back against, right? That's what they're saying. But you're not asking yourself the question, what if you become indecent in the whole process? In the whole process of trying to secure, if you become indecent, then you ask anybody in the university, what percentage of Muslim girls that are attending the university, how many are pure and clean? You know, I get sometimes some people that are teaching or lecturing at the university, they come here. So they tell you, because these people, they talk openly, freely. For them, anything, everything goes. So they say, Mohana, they come in, a lot of women come in with abayas. But in 1 year's time, we'll guarantee you that they can be lying around in compromising positions with anybody, with a white, with a Hindu, with a black, with the colored, anybody they can be lying around. But they're coming in with abayas. And in 1 year's time, we guarantee you that this is what the university offers, amongst other causes. The cause of indecency. That's what we call offer. So what if, it doesn't apply only one side. What if she loses her, what she's got? She's indecent. Now she lost her decency just because of her material security. I say, what has she gained? Unki iffat khatam ho gayi, wo khatam ho gayi. For a Muslim, that chastity is so great that if that chastity is gone, then she's gone. Then she's a non-entity. She's just a number. There's a property that's a public property after that. She's no more belonging to you. So you see this dua of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, that I ask refuge from the time لا يتبعوا فيه الأليم ولا يستحيا فيه من الحليم قلوبهم قلوب العاجم وَأَلْسِنَتُهُمْ أَلْسِنَةُ الْأَرَبِ. I was sitting there in the office once. Someone, lecturer, came in. All types come in. Sometimes a beggar comes. Sometimes he'll give a good story. You know, one person say, you know, everything comes from Allah Ta'ala. You know, misfortunes. That type of person will come. Misfortunes, property, prosperity, good comes. Everything must be happy with the decree of Allah Ta'ala. After he gave me the whole bayan, 5 minutes, someone, now can you help me now? So all type of customers you get, every type. So that lecturer was here. So he's telling me that he was in Pick and Pay. Right? So he saw an old woman. Actually, I brought this when some ulama came in from Joburg, my Ibrahim Bam and all that, they came here. So they came for some of the work. And while sitting down for the meals, then the topic just went on to education, woman education, etc., etc., etc. So, I didn't want to bring up the hadith, etc., what the hadith has to say, and what the Quran has to say. I just presented some statistics, that's all. So I showed them about 2-3 things I showed them. This one incident I showed, that this lecturer came in, and then he says that I was just going out of the shop. I had set myself up, and I seen at a distance there was an old woman, it seemed to be an Afrikaner woman, 84 years of age, and she was struggling. So I went and helped her push her trolley and put her goods into the car. As she sat down, she's comfortable. So then she looked up at me, and she says, you know, our people were as good as your people. Our people, these are her words, this Afrikaner old 84-year-old woman. Our people were as good as, we had a lot of respect, a lot of values, right? A lot of systems. Everything was working very well. Homes, there were no divorce cases, there was no broken homes, no single parents. The problem started off when we were encouraged to send our girls to schools, universities and colleges. That's where the problem Now, she's a non-Muslim. She's talking from that perspective. Right? He started off. So I'm explaining this, ulama, that my tabiat is, when there's a problem, I don't want to see just the problem, but I want to see, I want to trace it, where it's coming from. See, it's nice to see where it's coming from. You can't just look at the problem itself, see where it's coming from. So now, this is a non-Muslim woman. She's talking now, obviously, not as a woman of Islam. She's not an advocate of Islam. She's just general information she's giving. It started off, she says, when we sent our girls to schools, universities and colleges, the respect was gone, divorces just escalated, broken homes, everything started off at that point. And the reason is obvious now, they're going to schools, university, etc. So they become free-minded, right? Because they feel now that gender equality, and because the wife is earning, she's generating income, he's generating income, so it makes us equal. When it's equal, then he doesn't have any degree of superiority over me. He doesn't have to rule me. I can do my own thing. He can do his own thing. So I'm asking that group of ulama, see now where the problem, how you identify the problem. If we are encouraging it, right? I'm not talking about haram and halal, but it's nice to see the stats also, where the wrong is coming from. And if this thing had destroyed that community that was very, very conservative, orthodox, what will it do to us? We start off like this, and in a few years, then everybody's going there. And then what happens? The rot that sets in. Then to clear the rot becomes very difficult. That was the one thing, the game of stats, right? The other thing I told him, now the other thing is a little bit difficult because there's a lot of professional people here. So that may just go against them, right? But if they allow me, then I would say it. So the second thing I told him, all right, look at your masjids, your madrasas, right? I asked Mullah Ibrahim Ba, your jamiat offices, madrasas, all that, right? Most of the funding is coming from which sector, professional or businessman? So he put his face down, Mullah, definitely businessman. The funding is coming mostly. I don't say they're not giving, but most of the funding is coming from businessmen. So I said, this professionalism is not on. If it was doing so good, then they would have been the best contributors. But the best contributors are the businessmen. They are the barakat is there. Then the second thing I told him. The third thing I told him, say, I like, my tabiat is, I want to trace things. A statement is made, I want to trace, I want to check myself. So I told him, you see, when you talk about wealth, right, wealth and financing, then the imams in all wealth and financing and riba, all that, whatever, is the Jew, right? We talk about them, right? The wealthy, prosperous, games, and shop right, right? You look at the top, you look at some Jews there, right? Bank, FNB, all that, you find someone on the top, right? So in wealth, commerce, they are the leaders, right? Now, what do they do with their children? So, I read an article. What they do with their children is, the ones that are intelligent and coming from good families, they're all put into the business. The ones that can't make the grade a little bit, or often, or yatim and all that, you know, they can't find anything from they send them to university. I read that article myself. I read it. So this thing comes with a price. What we need to accept today is this thing, this sending girls out, then it comes with a price. And after some times, if their chastity is lost, then you can't blame that girl. Right? You can't blame her altogether. Like jumping into the lake and say, I don't want to get wet. It's going to have a natural consequence. You're putting the child there, right, and you want the child not to be burnt. You're going to get affected at some point or the other. To say you will never get affected, no, you are hiding yourself from realities. Realities. I ask you, right, our dadis and nanis, right, Allah Ta'ala filled the graves with noor, right? Which of them were doctors and specialists? None of them. They did everything. And all their children, you see, you know, those women that were conservative, stayed at home, mostly, by and large, you'll find their children went straight, prosperous, they did things. They were not educated. I know in my own family, the women that were more uneducated, the more prosperous their children became. Those that were not educated, you know, circular-wise, their children were more intelligent and they were much more prosperous, more intelligent. People go up to them for advice and counseling. When the woman didn't touch the school door. But those who went to school after that, you know, after that, now, late 60s, and they started sending children to school, then you didn't find the same thing. Then the children, some came right, some went off, some became delinquents, everything happened after that. But it started with the school. So that school is to promote indecency. It's got a lot of things to offer, but amongst the causes that it offers, one cause they offer is the cause of indecency. And I'm saying it not in ridicule, I'm saying it as a fact. You see, this W. W. Hunter, he writes that there is a Muslim, approximate words, right? You know, he's a writer for the British, right? He's a writer. So he writes, there isn't a Muslim, a Buddhist, a Christian, a Jew that attends our schools, our colleges, our universities. He attends and passes our universities. He doesn't pass without having some reservations and doubts about his own religion. So it's engineered such that you must leave to have doubts. You must leave in a state of mind that you have doubts about your own religion. So then you won't take your religion seriously. Well, really, am I from Adam al-Islam or something else? You know, so many educated people come and ask the same question. So they're not yet clean about their own beliefs. Their own beliefs are all contaminated. And it takes another zamana to clean and clear their beliefs. But at what? The silly thing. This university. So, for our own iman, iman of our progenies, yaqeen and akhirat. You know, we believe in akhirat. Amantu billah. Wa malaikati wa kutubi wa rusuli wa yawmil akhir. We believe in all these things here. For the own akhirat of the children, let it not be that on the day of Qiyamah, right, these innocent darlings of ours, children, grandchildren of ours, they come to Allah Ta'ala, hold our collars, and say Allah Ta'ala, complain to them, these people took us to the doors of the universities and schools and high schools, and we, our faith got contaminated. So, ata'ana sadatana wa kubara'ana, fa'adalluna sabila, we followed them, they misled us. Atim dhafaini, Allah Ta'ala punished them double. We are in for trouble, but them give them a double punishment. That they led us to that door, and they corrupted and contaminated our beliefs. We are in trouble, Allah Ta'ala double their punishment. Atim dhafaini min al-adhab. Though I didn't intend speaking this here, but I think just drifted to this. Then I feel maybe Allah Ta'ala wants us to speak about this, to discuss this thing here. But the question will come now, what do we do with our girls then? Until they marry, what should we do? The simple answer is, but in this, for 1300 years, what were you doing? 1300 years, is the creation of man, is it only in this 21st century, or it was always? It was always there. It didn't come out now only. It was there all the time. When it was there all the time, then how did your dada, dadi, nani and all, how did they behave? They behave with a lot of respect, a lot of shame. Just read one incident, you know, to understand the level of chastity. Because this chastity and haya is next to iman. That chastity goes, your iman is gone. It's a pillar of support for iman. That thing goes, it's gone. Just to show, impress upon you, the level of chastity in the old, right? The dada, dadi, whoever is now over 85, 90. Right? Just a case example, case study, right? Pull out one of your dadi's dresses, right? That passed away maybe about 50 years ago, right? Over 80, 85, right? Pull out her dress, right? And look at a dress of a girl today, even though she's an alim or whatever. I ask you, which dress has got greater chastity and respect? Her clothing or our girls' clothing today, whether they are alimas or not, which clothing has got greater chastity, respect, and greater shame? Where is shame? Where is more shame? In their clothing, there's absolutely no sexual appeal. In this clothing, whoever is wearing this clothing, there is a sexual appeal. You're going for Umrah, one of the things in the agenda is you have to trade in the abaya. Because that thing is out-fashioned, something got an appeal. Appeal to who? Something that's got an appeal. So maybe they didn't know about abaya, etc. But really, in their clothing, there was a lot of shame. Now, when we broke this fiber of shame, what happened? You know, you get people complaining, right? Youngsters complaining. Youngster is complaining about his own mother. He says, you know, she dresses up tights, you know. She dresses up like that. And then, I'm young, 16, and sometimes I just touch her with feelings. La'ata ummahu ala niyatan. See that hadith. La'ata ummahu ala niyatan. I touch her with lust. What happens to the marriage after that? There was one case that came here. A little bit amusing as well, but it's also concerning. One person went for a proposal, real story, he went for a proposal, right? And at that proposal, there's only one girl in that family, so she came like how it is normal, she'll bring the tea or samosa run, what they call it, samosa? Yeah? Samosa run, huh? So she came with whatever. So this suitor that came in to see the girl, he says, it's not that girl, man, some other girl I came for. It's not that girl. Anyway, in the whole whatever was going on, the girl's mother had to be around. Now, this is the one I was looking at. Now, the way they are dressed now, that it's got an appeal, it's got a sexual appeal. And that old lady, her dress had no sexual appeal. What they dressed up respectfully, good clothing they wore. But there was no sexual appeal in their clothing. And now, alima or no alima, look at the clothing. Look at the abaya. Look at the clothing. What a sexual... That's what I feel, that we'll do ourselves a great favor if we revive this. You know, to revive a sunnah, you're going to get the sawab, a sunnah that is getting extinct, right? And you revive that sunnah, you're getting the reward of a shaheed, right? But now, a very important sunnah, very like an obligation, if that thing is getting extinct and we try to revive the thing, can you imagine what will be the extent of the reward? You know, everyone has to go to ISIS and all that, to get the reward of a shaheed, right? Whether it's right or not right, Allah Pak knows, right? But the reward that you can get immediately is you try and revive the sunnah of shame, modesty, the clothing, the ways, the appearance, where they go, where they don't go. To bring about this, revive this thing here, won't the reward be greater than an ordinary sunnah? Sunnah is so much, but this is now like an obligation, I'll say obligatory, right? So when this thing is dying, extinct, then you can imagine what will be the reward of that. So Allah Ta'ala grant us tawfiq, as I said, whatever is being discussed now, we go into our cubicles, or if we are here, then instead of talking about them, we think about this thing, and, all right, how can I introduce it? I am also guilty to some extent, and I can't fight in the home, can't capsize the home. Straight away you can't bring about changes, but I know that my Nabi stood for shame. He encouraged it, right? He spoke about it, and this thing is going down. And the reward for it is so magnificent. I mustn't be deprived of this reward. How can I contribute at least towards something that on the day of Qiyamah, if I meet up with my Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, my Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam will be pleased. This person here, mashallah, that thing was my way was going out. And in his own way, he tried to bring it up again. Allah Ta'ala grant us tawfiq.